Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the latest Royal Automobile Club podcast in association with Motorsport Magazine. My name's Simon Aaron, I'm the features editor of Motorsport, and I'm joined today by two of the most distinguished voices in British motor racing. On my right, Alan Hyde will be familiar to anyone who's attended his pit interviews and reports, rounds of the British Touring Car Championship will be very familiar, and at other events as well. On my left, one of the greatest voices, I would say, there has ever been, if not the greatest voice there has ever been in motorsport, Murray Walker, a great welcome to the Royal Automobile Club.
I can see how you got on, Simon. thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
But, I mean, one of the reasons we're here today, we're in what used to be called the television room here at the club. And as it says on the tin, it's a place where members could come in, sit down, relax, and watch TV. That's it. And it's been completely refurbished. It looks wonderful. And it's now, henceforth, going to be known as the Murray Walker Television Room, which is a fantastic tribute, not least because in this wonderful club with all the fantastic rooms and libraries and furnishings, etc., there have only previously been one room named after a motor racing figure, which is Henry Seagrave. Now, he achieved quite a lot behind the wheel. You've got no Grand Prix wins, no fastest laps, no pole positions, and you stalled a McLaren in the pit lane at Silverstone once.
Lots of appearances.
But many, many appearances. But you've joined Henry Seagrave as one of the two people. That's a fan. You must feel incredibly honoured. It's a great sign of the affection which you're held
Simon,
by the British public.
I'm supposed to be good with words, but it's the way I've made my living. I genuinely find it very hard indeed to find the right words to say how pleased I am and proud I am about the room that we're sitting in. My father belonged to the club. He had the club badge on his Lagonda. I used to work at 2 St James's Square, just across the road from where we're sitting now. And I joined the club. And I used to come across here and play squash in the days when I could move around quickly, or quicker, and I used to swim here. And the Royal Automobile Club is one of the linchpins of worldwide motorsport. And to have a room named after me is beyond my wildest hopes and ambitions. And there's not going to be any doubt about whose room it is, because when you walk in, there's going to be a sill plate at the door there which says Murray Walker TV Room.
Yeah, I know about that because I fell over it when I came in for the first time. You were the sprightly 95 and a half years old. You missed it. You came in cleanly. And one of the other things that makes it unmistakably a Murray Walker room is the fact that sprinkled around are all sorts of artefacts, things that you've accumulated over the years through the generosity of others. There's a Jaguar nose cone, which is beautifully inscribed from the early 2000s. And just to the top left as the camera's looking over my shoulder, it's one of the original Indianapolis bricks from the Speedway, which the Speedway president, Tony George, presented you in 2001. I mean, I was at that presentation in the paddock at Indianapolis, and as with the room being named after you, it's one of the few occasions when I've seen you genuinely sort of starstruck, lost for words.
Yes, it was an intensely moving occasion. I didn't really know what it was all about when we went over there. But when we walked in, there were all these chaps from all the teams, and Bernie Ecclestone and Flavio Briatore and Tony George, the boss of Indianapolis, and all the other crowned heads of Formula One, right down to blokes who blew the tyres up, and Michael Schumacher. So I thought, well, if it's good enough for Michael Schumacher, it's good enough for me. So I went and sat next to Michael. And Tony Jardine was doing the Master of Ceremonies, and he was getting all sorts of people like David Coulthard and others to come out, and he gave him a piece of paper on which something I was supposed to have said, I emphasise, was written, and they had to read it out imitating me. So he gets Michael up, gives him a piece of paper, and on this piece of paper is written, "Here comes Michael Schumacher, son of Ralph Schumacher," which I certainly did not say. And Michael looks at me in puzzled and said, "I don't understand. What am I supposed to do?" I said, "You're supposed to read that the way I said it." He said, "But when you said it, I was in the car and I couldn't hear you." So I said, "Come on, Michael, we'll do it together." I put my arm around him, and I've got a lovely photograph at home of the two of us smiling at the camera. Lovely bloke. And then afterwards he said, "I would like Murray Walker to interview me." And as you know, Michael Schumacher didn't do interviews for a long time. So I was very proud about that too.
And amongst the other stuff that's in here, one particularly intrigues me. There is a McLaren front wing end plate, which the whole team at the time signed, the Formula One team. I gather there's quite an interesting story about how that came to be in your possession.
Surprisingly, Simon, there is. Yes, yes. At the time, it was in the early 2000s, and Ferrari were sweeping all before them, winning everything. And I was giving Ferrari a lot of praise, justifiably. And a letter arrived one day from McLaren, from Martin Whitmarsh, who was the boss. And it said, the gist of what it said was, "Dear Murray, here at McLaren we're very proud and pleased at the success of our Ferrari rivals, but you don't seem to have absorbed the success that we've had in the past. Could I invite you to come to working, take a tour of the factory and re-meet your old friends here?" So I go down there, and in the reception area there's Joe Ramirez, George Langhorne, a couple of other people. We go around the factory, and as if by magic, every time I walked into a department, from behind a pillar or somewhere, someone would appear who I knew. "Hello, Murray, what are you doing here?" I said, "I know why I'm here, you know." "Why's that?" he says. "I'm here to be brainwashed," I said. "Yes," he said, "that's right." So I was brainwashed, and I gave a lot of attention to McLaren afterwards. And they gave me that rear wing end plate, which they have all signed. And that was a typically human gesture.
Something which people don't often associate with McLaren.
People think or thought that McLaren was a grey organisation because that was Ron Dennis's favourite colour. but it's not like that at all. They're a lovely lot.
There's just one more I'll ask you about before we move on. It's a Michael Turner print up there of Mike Hailwood. I know you were a great admirer of Mike Hailwood. I think you were friends as well, weren't you?
I was a great friend of mine.
What are your memories of Mike Hailwood?
I wanted that to be here because people associate with me with Formula One. But from 1949 until 1993, I was the BBC's motorcycle commentator for part of that time with my father. And probably the most exciting and rewarding mentally time I had was when Mike was racing, because he was a one-off like there's never been before, with the possible exception of Valentino Rossi. Mike was a lovely bloke. He was laid back. He didn't care about anything very much, but he rode a motorcycle like a genius. And he won so many TTs, and undoubtedly the most exciting race I have ever seen in my life was the 1967 Senior TT, when Mike Hailwood and Giacomo Agostini were battling for supremacy on the Honda and MV bikes, respectively. I won't bore you with all the details, but it was a fantastic race.
Alan, you're a commentator. What kind of an inspiration, Murray and others, for you when you were sort of kind of growing up as a cup commentator?
Massively. Murray has said to me in interviews before that people invited you into their living rooms. So you were part of the family, part of the house for that day. And it's true, that's what happened with my mum. My mum had a passing interest in motorcycle racing from when she was younger, but not really an interest in car racing, which I did have an interest in. And Murray was friendly, he explained things, and she became a fan of Grand Prix racing because, exactly as you say, Murray, you brought it into the family. The friendly part of your commentary was an integral part, and I have to say, I've tried to carry that feature on with what
you're,
I do.
You're a privileged visitor to people's homes. Mm. They can turn you off if they don't like you. Mm. And I always tried to remember that I was talking to people who weren't necessarily passionate about Formula One or motorcycle racing like I was, but who ought to be educated, if you'd like to put it that way, about the ins and outs and the personalities and the quirks of the machinery and all the rest of it. They're human beings and they should be talked to like that.
The other thing that you did, Murray, that I have huge respect for, and that, once again, I hope I have as well, is you respected every driver, every rider you ever spoke about or talked to. I do, because I certainly couldn't do half the job that they do. But wherever they were in the championship, wherever they were on the grid, you had ultimate respect for
Alan,
everyone.
You know, and I know, that even the lowliest driver in the back row of a Formula One grid or the back row of a motorcycle grid is a bit of real talent. That was a talent I didn't have enough of. I had some talent, and I rode competitively in 6-day enduros and 1-day trials, and I did a bit of racing, but I was never ever going to be at the Mike Hayward or the Graham Walker, my father's level. And that's, you know what they say, those that can, do, and those that can't, talk about it.
But the one question from a commentary point of view that I'd love to ask you, and that I've never asked you, when you started, obviously some people have a natural ability to be able to talk about something, but what was the biggest challenge about taking your knowledge and conveying it to other people? What was the biggest challenge of becoming a commentator?
Knowing when to stop, probably. I mean, I had a lot of co-commentators. I had Jackie Stewart was a co-commentator of mine. Graham Hill was a co-commentator of mine. So was Barry Sheen in the motorcycle world. So was Jody Scheckter. So was Alan Jones. So was Jonathan Palmer. And, of course, Martin Brundle. And, of course, James Hunt. So I had a lot of people to work with, and they all had very different personalities, and I just tried to adjust to them.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you always commentate standing up?
Always, Simon. It's this. I was talking to, as you do, a chess specialist once.
Obviously, yeah.
And I mentioned I stood up to talk. He said, "Yeah, there's a physical reason for that." He said, "If you commentate sitting down, you sit with a microphone like this, and you're slumped and your lungs are deflated. But," he said, "if you stand up, your shoulders go back and your lungs are inflated and you can speak much louder."
So the kind of Murray Walker's signature excitable commentary is down to chess, sort of.
Probably. Yeah. 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 And enthusiasm, I hope.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I asked the question because I lap charted for you once, Brands Hatch Formula Ford Festival in the mid 1980s, and it was a wonderful experience. But you're dancing around to my right, I think you were, you know, you're busy pointing to no one in particular, and I'm sort of ducking while trying to keep a lap chart, and you're skipping around. But you were so involved in the whole thing. It was a privilege to watch.
Simon, they talk about things getting in the zone. Well, I got into the zone when I'm normally quite a calm, dispassionate bloke, but put me in front of a competitive motorsport thing, and something happens, and I become passionately involved in communicating to the people who are looking at the screen I'm talking to, and they're looking at as well. And yes, I always stood up because I moved about the box a lot, I gesticulated. Yes. James Hunt always used to sit down a sort of sullen heap alongside me and gesture for them. I'm now mature enough, Simon, to
just
confess that I must have been very difficult to be a co-commentator for, because I wanted the microphone. I had so much to say and I was so enthusiastic about saying it that I didn't want any interruption from James Hunt or Jackie Stewart or anybody else. I wanted to give it plenty.
I mean, I know it's a story that's been told many times, but you did come very close to thumping James, didn't you?
On one occasion, when I was standing up and James was sitting down, he thought the old boy had been talking long enough. He caught hold of the microphone wire and pulled it, and the lip mic flew out of my hands into his, and he goes on talking about the race. And I was livid. And I actually, yeah, I had my fist back to give him a Faulkney one, sitting down. And Mark Wilkin, who was the producer, looked across. He said, so I didn't. And our friendship was retained.
We've got to wrap up fairly shortly. So are there any events, I mean, I know you've covered a multitude of things. Are there any events on which you haven't commentated, but you wish you had, and still time?
Snooker. If you can think of anybody less suitable to commentate on snooker than me, then I can't, but I would love to. And I was on the Jeremy Clarkson show. He had a chat show called Clarkson once. Yes. And he came into the green room before it began, and he said, look, is there anything you haven't done that you'd like to... Snooker? I said, I'd like to do a bit of snooker. He said, well, so there's only 10 minutes. He said, if we can find a clip, will you do it live, unseen? And I said, yeah, okay. So he puts the clip on and I say, here comes Steve Davis. They call him Boring Steve Davis. And he's picked up his special carbon fibre cue, which has got a special tip on it and chalk that you've never seen anywhere else before. Which ball is he going to hit? Is he going to hit the white ball or the red ball? I would have lasted about 10 seconds, I think.
It's not quite the measured tones of Ted Lowe, is it? No. But in terms of motor racing, were there any events, I don't know, Bathurst or anything?
I've done Bathurst twice, yes.
I mean, were there any events that you really would like to have done?
Crumbs. I've done most of them. Touring cars, Formula 5000, all the rest of them. I'm struggling to think, Simon. If it had been possible, I would love to have done commentary from Stirling Moss's passenger seat in the Mia Amelia.
Well, instead of Jenks?
Instead of Jenks, yes. I don't suppose for a moment Stirling would have reached Brescia or Rome or wherever it was supposed to be. But I would have enjoyed it while I was doing it.
Great answer.
You've been watching the sport from the 30s through to the 2010s. Do you have a favourite? I mean, I know you're passionate about everything, but do you have a favourite decade, a time when you thought Looking with the benefit of hindsight, you think that's probably as good as it got?
Well, for me, Simon, taking my age into account, it's definitely the 80s. Of course, you had Nigel Mansell, Nelson Piquet, Alain Prost, Ayrton Senna, all racing against each other, world champions, and a lot of needle between the four of them. And it was a great time.
1,400 brake horsepower qualifying engines,
right,
and so on and
right.
so forth.
And it was a great time to be talking about the sport, particularly because Britain was doing so well.
I've worked with you on quite a few events in recent years, Murray, particularly the Goodwood Festival of Speed, where you cannot walk 100 metres without getting stopped endlessly by lots and lots of people of all sorts of different generations that just want to say hello and have a photograph taken with you. I guess a lot of people over a lot of years have asked you a lot of questions. What's the most asked question that you've ever had from the public? Is it about working alongside James Hunt in the commentary box? Is it about your love of Nigel Mansell era of Formula One?
Is Lewis going to be world champion again? I think probably.
Is that the most one at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the most popular.
Yes. Very talented young man, and he's probably going on to be the greatest of all time in terms of statistics. Whether he's the greatest of all time in terms of all the things that make a great racing driver is a matter of opinion. Mm-hmm. But he's certainly one of the best.
Special.
Do you still watch current day Formula One with the same enthusiasm that you've always had for the sport?
Yeah, people think I sit in the study and throw bricks at the television set if it's not doing what I want it to do. But I don't actually, Simon. I sit there very calmly and dispassionately and watch it all happen. If my wife comes in, I don't ask her to leave the room, but I like to concentrate. I don't want to be there with a lot of people hooping and shouting about it. I just want to take it all in, because Formula One is actually a very difficult sport to follow. If you are a tennis fan or a football fan, you can get a good drift of what's happening without the sound at all. But you show somebody a Formula One race without any sound, without somebody telling them what's happening, that here's blogs coming in for the third time to change from ultra soft to ultra hard tyres and fill up the petrol tank at the same time or whatever, you're lost. You don't know. Commentators, this is going to sound a bit big-headed, and I don't mean it to, but I think that commentators matter more in motorsport than in any other sport.
Well, particularly in this era when it is as absurdly technical, but it is so intricately technical in a way that almost no other sport
is.
Yes,
and particularly, thank God, I tell you, I would not be sitting here talking to Alan and yourself if social media had existed in my time, because they would have had my guts for garters. I mean, they all make all these fuss about Murray's bloopers. The car in front is absolutely unique, except for the one behind it, which is identical. Nothing wrong with the car, except it's on fire. But they would have had me for that.
Yeah, I won't cut in with anything about cutting the tension with a cricket stump or anything like that, because it wouldn't be fair. But that is another Murray signature, and it's one of the reasons the public love you, because for all the passion, the information you gave them, just occasionally, there'd be. Do you look back on those things with a certain fondness?
Yes, I do. Because when you are commentating, and Alan will back me up on this, you haven't got time to think about, shall I say it this way or shall I say it that way. You say what comes into your head. And provided you've got a filter that stops you talking about anything obscenely or advertising, it comes out. And sometimes the wrong words come out, and sometimes they come out in the wrong order. But they all come from the heart. And if people take umbrage, I feel very sorry for them.
I think mentioning heart is a good way on which to good note on which to bow out, because, as I said earlier, the fact this room is named after you it marks the affection in which you're held by the whole nation for your contribution to motor racing over very many years. So, Murray, Thank you for the time. It's been a great privilege.
Thank you.
Thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Alan. Left hand. Sorry.
And we'll look forward to welcome you all to the next Royal Automobile Club talk show in association with Motorsport very soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.